Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for August 24th, 2010. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Michael Combe, a researcher at Cell Signaling Technology in Danvers, Massachusetts. A new study from his group uses a proteomic approach to identify targets of receptor tyrosine kinases, or RTKs, in cancer cell lines. Welcome, Dr. Combe.
Oh, thank you. It's a great privilege to talk about my work.
In this study, you were specifically looking at RTKs, or receptor tyrosine kinases. Why did you focus on this group of kinases specifically?
RTKs are growth factor receptors that are located on the cell surface, and they're involved in sensing and interpreting cell signals coming from the outside and converting those signals into responses involving growth, proliferation, and survival. So they're really key nodes in the cell's decision to grow, proliferate, live, or die. So therefore, it's not surprising that they're often constitutively activated in cancer by mutation, gene amplification, and often autocrine loops. So activated RTKs, they're well known to play a role in driving the inappropriate growth and survival that are really hallmarks of cancer cells and solid tumors. And in fact, as tumors evolve over time, they become highly dependent upon the activated receptor tyrosine kinases, such that if one were to turn off the RTK signaling, the cell immediately dies. And this phenomenon has been called oncogene addiction and is seen by many as really an important Achilles heel of the tumor cell. And the cells literally become addicted to the RTK and the pathway that drives it. So that's why we're so interested in this class of molecules.
Are RTK inhibitors used to treat cancers that exhibit addiction to RTK signaling?
They are. And there's a number of small molecule inhibitors that have been proved to treat cancers, solid tumors such as lung cancer or leukemia. And these drugs seem to have fewer side effects and have terrific benefits for the patients whose tumors are really driven by the activated RTK. So in lung cancer, patients with EGFR mutations respond very well to EGFR inhibitors, but patients without them don't respond at all. So it's really important in the future to match the patient with the drug based on a knowledge of the RTKs that are involved and the pathways really that are involved in driving the tumor's growth and survival.
You set out to identify downstream targets of RTK signaling in cultured cancer cells. How did you identify the targets?
We used a new screen that we developed that involved a way of really focusing in on three different core cancer signaling pathways that are known to be very important downstream of RTKs. And it really kind of opened up a signaling space that people hadn't been able to see before for a number of technical reasons. And it really helped deal with this problem that downstream of RTKs, they activate so many pathways that we were able to use the technology to focus in on one very important signaling space that involves AKT-like kinases that are very important in mediating survival, growth, and proliferation signals. And what we did was to look in three different cell lines that were addicted to three different receptor tyrosine kinases, and we were able to compare the substrates that we found in those three different cell lines and come up with a core set of molecules that were activated downstream of all three of these different receptor tyrosine kinases and come up with some core kinds of pathways. And about half of those molecules had never really been seen before and were not known to be important in RTK signaling. So this gave kind of a new view that is leading, I think, to some important new ways of thinking about targeting RTKs at that level in their signaling pathways.
What were some of these proteins that surprised you as being downstream of RTKs?
Well, there's a whole a number of different classes of proteins that we found. The one that we followed up in this paper were proteins that we could show were involved in stabilizing the receptor tyrosine kinases themselves. So we developed a screen. Once we had identified this core set of proteins, we developed an siRNA screen to look at which ones were functionally important in survival and proliferation. And from that screen, we identified, I think, six molecules that had a fairly important effect on growth and survival. And a couple of those were in the chaperone category. And that was surprising.
Chaperones are proteins that function to stabilize the structure or the conformation of other proteins.
That's correct. And how that's done in this case, in the case of the RTKs, is not well understood, although there are some pathways that have been identified that are involved in degrading and the downregulation. Once a RTK is activated, normally it's removed from the cell surface and then either recycled or sent to the lysosome for degradation. And what we think is that these molecules are involved in probably recycling them back to the membrane, as opposed to sending them to a degradative pathway. And so we think that these pathways are altering the balance of stabilization versus degradation, leading to prolonged RTK signaling. Because if you think of it, the cancer cell needs these molecules to be active all the time, driving their growth and survival. Whereas normal cells will activate the receptor and then quickly deactivate it. There's a drug out there now that's in development, and I think in clinical trials, that's a galdanamycin analog that targets the HSP90 chaperone complex, which is a very complicated machinery. And that is showing, I think, some very interesting promise in the future. And that, and we think that the pathway that we identified is somehow interacting with this HSP90 complex. So we think that targeting the stability of the RTK as well as inhibiting its kinase activity, if you can do that together, this would be a very important kind of 1-2 punch.
Does having this set of RTK targets change the way that you might think about treating cancers that are dependent on RTK signaling?
Well, I think understanding the pathway that the cancer cells become addicted to, and particularly at multiple levels, will in the end prove very valuable in terms of being able to inhibit that pathway at multiple levels. I think the key reason is because now we know enough about the RTK inhibitors to know that they're very effective in patients whose tumors are driven by RTKs, but the drugs are not durable. That is, virtually all the patients will relapse over a given period of time.
RTKs develop resistance to the drugs? They mutate?
Yes. So there's been two classes of resistance mechanisms. One is where the RTK itself mutates so that the cancer drug no longer can bind and the mutation occurs in the binding site. And the other is where there's a kinase switch involved and a new kinase kind of takes over and the cell uses that to reprogram the pathways that are it's dependent upon.
The idea is that having a second target, then, you could increase the efficacy of the RTK inhibitor.
Yeah, the chance of resistance, just like I think in the case of where HIV, a cocktail of inhibitors, has proven very valuable in managing resistance. I think the thinking in the field now is that cancer is very much like HIV in that sense, in that multiple inhibitors would be much more effective in preventing resistance and in generating a much more durable response. So the thinking is that hitting this addicted pathway at the RTK level and then at least one other level downstream could be much more effective in terms of generating a more durable response. And that's incredibly important to patients.
These techniques that you develop to identify molecules downstream of the RTKs in the cancer model, are these techniques that could be applied to other systems to learn more about complex signaling pathways in other contexts?
Yes, these are approaches that can be used to look broadly across the different signaling pathways in the cell. And one thing that sequencing of the cancer genome has told us is that there are many ways to produce a tumor, but most of the driver mutations seem to fall into a collection of about 12 core cancer pathways. And so one approach that we've been trying to take is to develop a technology and set of tools that would allow you to broadly survey across these core signaling pathways and quickly see in a highly personalized fashion which pathways are activated in your particular tumor or cancer cells. And that information will be very important in the future in terms of predicting the sensitivity or vulnerabilities of your cancer cells.
Another step towards personalized medicine.
Yeah, an important step, I think. But not looking at the genome, but looking at really the activity in these pathways and identifying which pathways are activated, driving the disease state.
personalized not in terms of the patient's genome, but personalized in terms of what's actually going on in the patient's tumor.
And I think that will be a very important approach in the future. And so that's been very difficult up to now because we've been looking really at the activity in these pathways one node at a time. And now this approach that we're describing here allows you to look broadly at many, many nodes at once. And that, I think, provides a much bigger view and will eventually lead to an approach that will allow us to look at all these pathways simultaneously and just see which one is activated and then be able to drill down on that activated pathway and identify the broken molecules that are really driving the disease and that will determine kind of the ability of your cells to respond to different therapies.
Well, thank you, Dr. Combe.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about our work. Appreciate it.
That was Michael Combe, senior author of a research article published in the August 24th issue of Science Signaling. That article is by Moritz and colleagues, and it's titled AKT-RSK-S6 Kinase Signaling Networks Activated by Oncogenic Receptor Tyrosine Kinases. And that wraps up the Science Signaling Podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.